In 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 7, I'm not going to turn there. I will later in the sermon. But in 1 Corinthians 5, 7, you're familiar with the phrase, purge out the old leaven. You probably have been likely doing that already, removing leavening from your homes. The English Standard Version and Young's Literal Translation says cleanse out the old leaven. William's translation says you must clean out the old yeast. There's different versions and translations. Clean out the old yeast doesn't quite cover it because yeast isn't the only leaven. But again, looking at the translations, it's time to get rid of the yeast. It's time to get rid of the leaven. Time to clean it all out. And it's time to remove the leaven from our homes and our cars. I know I've been told years ago by individuals, they said, you don't have to take it out of your car. It's only in your dwelling place. And I said, I have been in sales before where I was in my vehicle 10 to 12 hours a day, and I will remove all the leaven from my car. Not only just because it doesn't say just your dwelling, it says no leaven shall be seen with you. And so you can't have leavening in your car where people say, no, it's there. It's seen with you. In the particular job that I was in, I've had individuals, the company I worked for at the time years ago with a different career, I was transporting food. I worked for a company that sold food to restaurants. And they said, we need you to run all of these pizza doughs, pizza crust, down to a customer. And I said, can't do it right now. It's the days of unleavened bread. And they said, well, you don't have to open the boxes, but you just need to put it in your car and take it down there. I said, you're going to have to find a different way. So we do remove it from our homes. We remove it from our vehicles. And we have to ask the question, why? If we understand the physical and we perform something physical and we understand the spiritual, why is there still a need to remove it physically? Let's go to Exodus chapter 12 and verse 17. Exodus chapter 12 and verse 17. You shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for on this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. He says, this is something I want you to continue to do, and it is a reminder, something that I want you to do on a regular basis throughout your generations. So in type, in the first, we see that it's symbolic of Israel coming out of Egypt. They're coming out of sin. He said, I want to remind you when I brought you out of the land of Egypt. Verse 18, it says, in the first month, on the 14th day of the month at even, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. For in 7 days, no leaven shall be found in your houses. And that's why some will say, well, it's only your houses. You don't have to clean the garage. You don't have to clean the cars. That's a way of saying, well, I don't have to do the corners. I don't have to go on the outside things. And trust me, I found more leaven, I think, in the cars than I have in the house when we had little children. So it says, clean the leavening or remove the leavening from your homes. And it tells us why. It says, since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he's a stranger or native of the land. He said, if you eat it, you're going to be cut off from Israel. There was a penalty for eating something that was leavened. It represented taking in sin. Because during the days of unleavened bread, leavening pictures sin. And so you're eating something sinful. You're eating something that pictures sin. Now, some argue that we're commanded to eat unleavened bread every day. Whether the command is to eat it daily or commanded when you eat it to eat unleavened bread, we, again, must have unleavened bread if we eat it. But the penalty here is clear, that the punishment is for eating something that is leavened. The church has a publication, a study paper on eating of unleavened bread. I'm not going to take the time to go through that right now. But the conclusion of that, and some questioned the way it was written, it is not a sin if one day you do not take in any bread at all during the days of unleavened bread. I brought up the issue of fasting before, that if you hear during the days of unleavened bread, we're putting sin out of our life. we're examining ourselves, we're digging in deeply, that if you fasted during the days of unleavened bread, would it be a sin if you fasted and didn't eat anything, let alone unleavened bread? And I was assured by an individual, no, it's a sin if you fast during the days of unleavened bread, because you can plan it at different times. But the purpose of it is to remember the children of Israel coming out of Egypt and remember not to eat it, but you should. If you can, every day during the days of unleavened bread, you should eat it. It's just not a sin if you were to fast or if you were traveling and, oh, I'm on the airplane, there's no way to get any unleavened bread, I didn't eat any today. You don't have to feel that you have sinned by not eating unleavened bread. And again, please understand, the church is not saying you shouldn't eat it or that you don't have to eat it. You should eat it. Then there's a purpose behind eating unleavened bread. Number one, it's a quick reminder, you're not eating something puffed up. Yeah, if you eat matzos or if you eat rye crisps, as a kid that was my worst, I hated that. Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on rye crisp when I went to school. Just doesn't cut it. Sorry, Mom. I appreciate the effort. Would have been better on a matzo, but rye crisp just didn't work. But there's a purpose for eating that. We are taking in what is devoid of sin. We're taking in what pictures something that has sin removed from it. And you're taking in what is pure and profitable. And there's a reason why eating it every day is good. That spiritual counterpart is even more important than did you take a little piece and put it in. It's did you take in something unleavened spiritually? It's a reminder of these days that we're keeping, and there's a focus up for it. The sin and penalty is to eat something leavened. He said, if you eat it, you will be removed from the children of Israel. Here it clearly shows that the reason we remove it, he says, so that you don't eat it. Exodus 12 and verse 19 says, 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses. And we see why. It says, since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he's a stranger or a native of the land. King James Version says, 7 days there shall be no leaven found in your houses, for whosoever eats what is leavened, and this one says for instead of since, but for whoever eats that which is leavened, even that soul shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he's a stranger or whether he's born in the land. The word used in the King James Version for, or translated in the New King James Version since, is the Greek word K-I-Y, according to Strong's Concordance, translated since. But then when we look at other descriptions or definitions of it, Brown Driver Briggs' definition for it is because or surely. So we can say because. He's saying the reason why you remove leaven is because whoever eats it or eats that which is leaven, that soul shall be cut off. Or surely whoever eats it shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel. So leavening has to be removed. It says remove the leavening and it tells us why. So you don't eat it, whether you eat it accidentally or whether you just leave something and you go, well, I don't think it pictures that. I think I can leave this part of it. Adam Clark commentary says, no leaven shall be found in your houses. And I like the way that this is the way this is put. To meet the letter of the precept of the fullest manner possible, the Jews, on the eve of this festival, instituted the most rigorous search. Now, again, you can swing to both ends of the pendulum. You can go, okay, I'm just going to remove as much physical leavening as I can. And some people work extremely hard at removing leavening, taking the toaster apart part by part. Other people throw it away and just get in a toaster. Others just vacuum out what they can. If you get out of it what you can and there's pieces burnt to the side, I don't think you have a fear that you're going to eat it. I hope not. But they said they do the most rigorous search, do every part of their houses, not only removing the leavened bread, but sweeping every part that no crumb of bread should be left and any leaven in it. It is so strict that in their observance that in the letter of this law, that even if a mouse was to run across the floor with a breadcrumb in its mouth, They considered the whole house polluted, and they began the purification process again. We have already seen that leaven was an emblem of sin because it has proceeded from corruption. The putting away of this implied the turning to God with simplicity and uprightness of heart. Now, even Adam Clark commentary realizes there's another purpose besides just getting rid of leaven and saying, okay, I followed the rules. We have to turn, and there's something that God expects from us. Exodus chapter 12 and verse 15. Exodus 12 and verse 15. It says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove the leaven from your houses. Now, some people say, well, we shouldn't remove leavening until we start the days of unleavened bread. We don't have a one-room house any longer with rounded corners like many did at that time. I don't think any one of us could go the day before and say, okay, let's clean for days of unleavened bread. Our homes are bigger. We have cars. We have other things that we need to remove the leavening from. On the first day, you shall remove leaven from your houses, and whoever eats leavened bread from the first day to the last, that person shall be cut off from Israel. Leaven is a substance that causes bread or doughs to rise. It causes them to puff up. It includes yeast, which is a natural or biological leavening agent. And when we say it's a biological, it's because it's something that happens naturally, and if you were to set out dough, it is something that would naturally become fermented over time. So it's naturally occurring. There are also chemical leavening agents such as baking powder, baking soda, sodium bicarbonate, and potassium bicarbonate. And these work when moisture or heat are added to them. When we look at labels, these are the things we want to look for. And of course, it's difficult now because so many things say leavening agent. That's easy. Oh, leavening. Take it out. But then all of the different names of things that we have to search for can be very difficult. It's easy to remove items such as breads, cakes, cereals, cookies, crackers, pies, things that contain leaven. But then we look, okay, oh, that's right, in the freezer, I've got breaded cheese sticks or anything that's breaded, breaded chicken. Those things have to be removed and put out. And when I say put out, it doesn't mean we hang it over the fence and at the end of the 7 days we pull it back over. You wouldn't do that with frozen things anyway, unless you live in Fargo, North Dakota. But we don't do that. We don't hang things over the fence. Now, commonly used leavening agents include baker's yeast. That's a rare yeast that some people use. It's a raw yeast. But you have to use it within a certain amount of time because it goes bad. So there's baker's yeast, active dry yeast, sourdough. And it is dough containing a symbiosis of wild yeast and various lactic or acetic acid bacteria. Doesn't sound appealing, but it tastes very, very good if you like sourdough. Baking powder, baking soda, ammonium bicarbonate. Other names are ammonium hydrogen carbonate, acid ammonium carbonate, monoammonium carbonate, and carbonic acid monoammonium salt. Sounds like those commercials for drugs. It'll help your allergies, but it might cause you to experience dry mouth, vomiting, diarrhea, constipation, bleeding, or death. And you go, no thanks, I'll take my chance with allergies. But you look at all these different names, you go, what does all of that mean? And again, we have to understand what we're removing. I want to read from an article, What is Leaven? And this was put out several years ago. The Smith's Bible Dictionary shows various substances known to have fermented qualities, but ordinary leaven consists of a lump of old dough in a high state of fermentation, which is mixed into the mass of dough preparing for baking. So that's the definition according to Smith's Bible Dictionary. Merriam-Webster's Collegiate Dictionary defines it as this: a substance, as yeast, used to produce fermentation in dough or a liquid, especially sourdough, a material as baking powder used to produce a gas that lightens the dough or batter. So under this, it lists leavening agents: yeast or baker's yeast, baker's ammonia, sourdough starter, and some always add, well, is sourdough considered a leaven? Yes, it is. That's what the children of Israel had, basically, was sourdough. Sodium bicarbonate, which is baking soda, bicarbonate of soda, ammonium bicarbonate or ammonium carbonate, baking powder. Now, baking powder is, let me demonstrate. And it's not Days of Unleavened Bread yet, so I can show you. You see the Arm & Hammer sign. This is baking soda. This is baking powder. Now, the difference between baking soda and baking powder is what's called cream of tartar. Now, cream of tartar is not a leavening agent. Some will say, oh, yeah, it's in baking agents. It's when you bake, it's got cream of tartar in it. Well, cream of tartar mixed with baking soda makes baking powder. It lessens the amount of activity that takes place within the baking powder. I want to show you just very quickly. This is something I started taking at night. I heard it was, they said this is a weight loss, a way to lose weight and activate your system at night. This is water, apple cider vinegar, and lemon juice. And when you mix in baking powder, you see it bubbling up and fizzing. I know because I've done this so many times it won't come over the top of the cup. You can see it working. It's active. If I was to mix these two together, it's going to be a little bit less active because this actually tones down baking soda. So baking soda, we know, is something that's a leaven, but cream of tartar is not. Baking powder is. It's got baking soda in it. So ammonium carbonate, hartshorn. I can admit I've never used hartshorn to make anything, or barm, which is liquid leavening. That's probably what happens to brewer's yeast after it begins to break down. It becomes a liquid. Then there is a brewer's yeast with a name that is Saccharomyces cerevisiae, or Vesali. That is a brewer's type yeast. I haven't used that one either. Tartrate baking powder, which is rare, and monocalcium phosphate. These are things not considered leavening agents. Brewer's yeast. Now, when I sold food to restaurants, we sold companies brewer's yeast. What brewer's yeast is, it says tortula yeast or yeast extract. It's dead yeast that's used for flavoring. If you've ever been around somebody who's baking with yeast, you smell the yeast. You go, oh, wow, I smell bread. I smell yeast in the air. Well, when yeast dies, it still has that smell. It has no activity properties. It can't leaven, but they add it because they want that the smell of yeast within a product. So brewer's yeast or dead yeast is not leaven. Kefir. I don't know if you've ever had kefir before. That's not a leavening agent. Beer. Cream of tartar, which we discussed. Potassium carbonate. Now, this list that was given several years ago had potassium carbonate and potassium bicarbonate. Actually, potassium bicarbonate can be used as a substitute for sodium bicarbonate. Now, some will say, well, if it can be used like cream of tartar, if it's used in baking, you have to remove it. Well, flour and salt and water are used in baking too. They are not the leavening agents. And in this particular case, though, potassium bicarbonate can be used as a leavening agent and sometimes is used as a substitute for baking soda. And again, it's a principle. We don't want to, this cookie doesn't have sodium bicarbonate. It has potassium bicarbonate. Then it would still be leavened. We follow that basic principle. Calcium propionate, autolyzed yeast, egg whites, and cornstarch. People say, well, egg whites, you can make a fluffy cake with egg whites. And you can, but eggs aren't considered leavening agents. Neither is cornstarch. Cornstarch is something that you can use to thicken soups or stews. And they say, well, because it thickens, it's making it bigger. No, it's making it thicker, but it's not making it rise. This article goes on, and this is an article, What is Considered Leaven, by Cecil Moranville back in 2019. This basic principle answers the host of questions about what products are not human food or bread products. He goes on, toothpaste, pet food, medicines, cat litter. Some cat litters now have baking soda in them to reduce the smell. He's saying you don't have to take your cat litter and throw it out because you might go eat the cat litter. Or you might use the cat litter to make food with. You're not going to consume it. And the whole reason in removing it is to not consume it. Salt, water, laundry detergents, and acids, or fire extinguishers. Now, most people don't go, well, I have to get rid of my fire extinguisher during the days of unleavened bread. It has baking soda in it. It's what puts out fires. So he's saying that does not constitute leavening. You're not going to go, I really want some puffed up bread. Take that fire extinguisher and try to give it some life. These are things that are not considered to be leavening. So again, looking at this, I want to read a little bit more of this particular article. It says, rather than produce a list of items that must go or can stay, the church doesn't say this, you have to put this out, you can keep this, you can use this one, you can't use this one. The church has taught the scriptural instruction, leavening, which we can understand, you can find out what leavening is, along with principles contained therein, so that an individual would be able to exercise good judgment. We advise people to be cautious about accepting a wide variety of opinions. I know not very many people have opinions today. Whether Jewish tradition or whether within the Church of God community. Those opinions, again, when we look at that, I've had people say, well, there's nothing wrong with that item. And you look it up and you go, no, that's a leavening agent. Or other people saying, well, you cannot have cream of tartar. No, cream of tartar is fine. But there's opinions of ideas that individuals have. Some have said, again, as was mentioned, you can't have eggs because egg whites makes things rise. Others have said you got to get rid of soft drinks. You got to get rid of beer because those are either made with sodium bicarbonate or they said beer and wine and those things are made with yeast. Again, they're not used as leavening agents. Others say dog food, toothpaste, and acid. I've got another cup here. You saw how the one fizzed up. This is antacid. And I'll show you. You'll be able to see. You can see it bubbling and all the bubbles coming up. And it didn't rise quite as much as the baking soda, but it is an antacid. And again, what you do or do not do is your choice. I don't think you're going to take your antacid and try to make a loaf of bread. It's not considered a leavening agent. In leavening agents, anywhere in the descriptions or in definitions or online, you're not going to find your toothpaste is a leavening agent or that your dog food, cat litter, or antacid is a leavening agent. Now, if it makes you uncomfortable and you go, but I know it has baking soda, throw it out. Go 1 week without antacid. By the way, this hasn't helped me lose weight yet. But I don't have heartburn at night, so I'll keep doing that. So it's telling us what we don't go by opinions. Study it, read it, prove it, whether something is or is not. And if you feel uncomfortable, don't sin against your conscience. The church does not go through a list of every little thing that comes up, leavening or not leavening. We should be learning that on our own, so each year we have that knowledge behind us. But it's clear in the scripture, the meaning of leavening is what's used to make something rise so that you can eat it. And again, like the Israelites basically use sourdough, they would take water. Sourdough is basically just water and flour. And you put water and flour together and you let it sit for a week and you start seeing it start bubbling. And you add flour to it. And when it doubles in size, you take some of it out, add some more flour, and it starts working because of the bacteria that's in it. And again, it doesn't sound very appetizing, but sourdough is wonderful. So it's a principle behind it. Anything that's leavened, the children of Israel used sourdough. That's what they had. That was their leavening. And that's why it's better, like the one translation says, you remove all the yeast. Well, it's not just yeast. There's so many other leavening agents today that we have to go through and rigorously look at all the different ones that need to be removed. But it's also the principle behind it. whatever can be eaten or whatever is puffed, used to puff up. We don't want to offend other brethren by bringing an angel's food cake made with eggs on the first day of unleavened bread to the potluck, or to a potluck. We're not having one this year. Or you don't want to bring it tonight and be much observed. Years ago, and this was in the 1980s, you know, the crazy time of the 80s. But in 1980s, there was a potluck on a holy day, and somebody brought in an angel's food cake, and some of the ladies quickly ran over and grabbed that, and we got to take this to the kitchen. She said, no, it's made with egg whites. Well, people said, it looks like a leavened cake, and we're trying to avoid even the appearance of evil or appearance of leavening. So they asked her, you know, we're going to keep this in the kitchen. We're not going to put this out. Even though it didn't have leavening, it was offensive to some going, it just seems wrong eating a big fluffy cake on the days of unleavened bread. So we don't want to offend and we don't want to cause a stumbling block to our brother. And again, part of that is using wisdom. But we have the scriptural instruction that's saying leavening or anything that's used to lift or puff up, and the principle behind it going, okay, am I going to eat the cat litter? No, I don't think I need to worry about taking the cat litter out. But that's a personal decision, and the church doesn't govern, oh, I see that you have cat litter with baking soda. We're not going to come to your house and search through what you removed and did not remove. There's quite a few alternatives to making dough rise that a lot of people not even aware of. People say, well, what do you mean beer? Because by then the yeast is dead, but you can actually make bread, beer bread, soda bread, which is made with soda water. But again, there's ways of making things rise. But the purpose behind it is not to eat anything that is risen, anything that is leavened, puffed up. What is the intent? And if in question, to you, you should put it out. Now, as you know, the world is full of opinions. We talked about cream of tartar. If you still feel cream of tartar is a leavening agent, then remove it. When we put leavening out, it symbolizes both putting out something physical, but it also puts out what is hidden. We search our cupboards and we look for those things that normally we wouldn't say, oh, I've got leavening sitting there. Usually it's in the freezer items and you go, well, this isn't leavened. And you read through and you go, oh, yes, it is. There's leavening in there. But we look for things that are visible, but we also look for things that are hidden. It's not just a matter of going, I know where all my leaven is. I've done that before, even cleaning and removing everything that we thought was leavened. And at the time, I was using baking soda to brush my teeth in the morning, and I cleaned under my sink and cleaned out everything, and second day of unleavened bread, I opened my cupboard, and there's a box of baking soda. Now, I use it to brush my teeth, but it is a leavening agent, and that's what is designed for, even though it has alternate purposes. So I immediately threw it out. Didn't eat it. I wasn't eating it when I brushed my teeth with it either, but I wasn't eating it. But we have to look for things that are hidden. And sometimes there are ingredients that we question or we don't know about. This article goes on and says, however, some of these chemicals can have other uses besides leavening. Sodium bicarbonate, baking soda, for instance, can be used to control pH balance and is sometimes used for other medical issues. There are medicines that contain sodium bicarbonate. And people say, well, I'm supposed to be taking this medicine, but I'm not going to take it for 7 days because it has sodium bicarbonate in it for a medical reason. You're not using it as a leavening agent. You're not eating something that is leavened. You're eating something, your medicine that you could be taking. And so it says, in such items such as medicines, salts, some bath salts have sodium bicarbonate in them. And you're not going to use baths. I hope you wouldn't use bath salts to cook with. You go, okay, salt, my salt and my sodium bicarbonate are here together. It's not the kind of salt you want to eat. So bath salts and acids, these are often commonly used as binders and not as an agent to puff up. You can still see it bubbling here. I wouldn't take an acid and try to make a cake. Well, I'm out of baking soda, so I'm going to use my an acid. It's different, tastes different, and it's got binders. Bottled water may have sodium bicarbonate added to enhance the taste and add minerals. When used in these ways, sodium bicarbonate and other chemicals are clearly not acting as leavening agents. Now, if you took sparkling water and tried to make something puffed up with it, you might be able to. But again, there's other things I mentioned that you could use as leavening agents, but the purpose is you don't. And you remove anything that is used for baking, used for making leavening, so you don't eat it. So here he says with these bottled water and acids, he's not saying that we shouldn't get rid of baking soda and baking powder. I was shocked to see it sitting in my cupboard, and I threw it out immediately because it is used to bake with. It's used to make things with. And he is not saying it's okay to use sparkling water and acids or medicines or toothpaste to make bread. That's not what he's saying either. He's saying it's up to each individual when they look at that to go, okay, my medication contains this, but is it a leavening agent when I take my medicine? Goes back to scripture and principle. Back to the article, it says, when chemicals that could be leavening agents, if they were used in conjunction with food or in other ways, he says they're not what God intended for his people to put out to remember the affliction. You wouldn't, again, throw out medicine so you remember that God took the children of Israel out of Egypt. You think of that when you think of what they consumed, what the reason that their bread was unleavened. First, we go back to verse 39 in this chapter. And it says, they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were driven out of Egypt, and they could not wait, nor had they prepared provisions for themselves. The leavening process, which causes bread to rise, especially if you're doing a sourdough type like this, takes time. Some leavens make things rise quickly, and depending on what you add as binders or other things to it, will make it rise quickly. I was in the food service business, and we sold a lot to Italian restaurants and pizza restaurants, and I actually experimented and developed different recipes for some of my customers. And in making pizza dough, they said, I just can't get my yeast to rise very quickly. I found that most pizza places will use olive oil mixed into their pizza dough. And I found if you used peanut oil, it gave it the same effects, but it caused the dough to rise almost twice as fast as olive oil. So sharing with my customer, I'm like, try peanut oil. And they were very happy to see that the peanut oil caused the dough to rise very quickly. So there's different things that you can mix with it. And so looking at this, here they didn't have time to let their dough rise. They didn't have time to make it quickly. Some leavens make things grow quickly. Other leavens are slow. And sometimes when you make it, that says, put it in the fridge and let it proof for a day or 24 hours or 48 hours. If you're from Great Britain, you prove it. It's proving the dough. We watch the Great Baking Show, Great Britain, one of those. That's a baking show from Great Britain. And they use a lot of different terms. We proof the dough, they prove the dough. There's different terms that they use. But the Israelites had no time to spare when they left Egypt, so they baked flat bread. And so during the days of unleavened bread, he said, I want you to eat unleavened bread as a reminder they didn't have time to leaven their bread. Plus, it symbolized something for them, and it does for us today. What started out as necessity continued for 1 week, and God appropriately named the days Feast of Unleavened Bread, or as it says in the New Testament in Acts, Days of Unleavened Bread. And each year, as the Israelites observed this feast, it was a reminder of God delivering their forefathers from Egypt. We shouldn't do it just because it's routine. Oh, here's the Days of Unleavened Bread. Got to get rid of the leaven again. And not think about the principles behind it or why God said, I want you to teach this to your generations. It's a perpetual covenant that I want you to do. And we don't want to do it just because we have to. Just like we read in the New Testament. Not out of necessity, feeling, oh, I'm a part of the church, I got to get rid of all the leaven. No, we should be excited to get rid of it and think, this is the days that picture something, and I want to be a part of it. Now, we saw why we get rid of leaven, so we don't eat it. We want to be free of leaven, which is a type of sin. And it's a reminder that Israel was brought out of sin. And when we eat that unleavened bread, during the days of unleavened bread, it is to bring back that reminder. In the time remaining, I want to go through and look at lessons that we can learn while we're de-leavening now. In the next 2 weeks, as we prepare, or less than 2 weeks, for the Passover and the days of unleavened bread. One, leaven is a reminder of sin. Again, that's why we shouldn't do it as routine. It reminds us of sin. We realize after these days start, leavening is all around us. And hopefully, if you're in that frame of mind of watching for and looking for leaven products or leavening, you see that it's in so many things. Sometimes, if you stay inside for a few days during the days of unleavened bread, you go, wow, the days went by fast. It was easy this year not to avoid anything leavened. If you travel or if you go outside the home, it's everywhere around you, and you realize it's in everything that you do. If you go outside, you see billboards of burgers. And a lot of times I don't even notice those, but during the days of unleavened bread, they put this big burger and they're flashing the new type of burger at a restaurant. You go through checkout counters and there's impulse things. They call it impulse buys. I was in sales for 20 years and they call them impulse buys. And most people don't even realize that. Well, when you're checking out and you look over and they've got the counters full of candies and other things that you might buy on the way out. And they've tracked what products sell, what products don't, and they know what to put there because you go, oh, yeah, I could probably use that. And they sell a lot of items just by impulse. During the days of unleavened bread, I am amazed to see baking soda. Boxes of baking soda sitting in the impulse aisle. I'm like, is this a test? Why would that be there? You might see it cookies or other things that are puffed up on that impulse aisle. Twix candy bar, and you go, oh, candy bar sounds good. No, there's a cookie on the inside. Eating out is even more difficult because you go, okay, what on the menu? Oh, this wouldn't have leavening. And then you ask them, okay, I just want to make sure there's no leavening or sourdough. Oh, no, this has leavening in it. It's like, why would that have leavening? But you have to be careful when you eat out. Days of unleavened bread. It was actually not to be much observed. We had it catered 1 year. This was in Missouri. And they wheel out the food, and they've got these carts that open up with a big front, like almost like a barbecue grill. And they come down, and they open up these carts, and they wheel in two other carts, and they open them up, and it's got all these rolls in it. And we said, we can't have that. They said, no, it's okay. This is sourdough. And we said, we still can't have that. We need to remove that. But it's all around us, and we start seeing it. If you're out, you start seeing all of these things coming up around you. Just as leaven, yeast, baking soda, sourdough, all of it is there and it's around us. And you start realizing, if you're watching for it, where it is, it's everywhere. So is sin. The Israelites would set their dough out and allow yeast spores in the air to land on it. That's why they didn't have time to make it leavened. Didn't have time to land on it, and they didn't have their starter. So when they left, they ate flat bread. But the point is, the spores, the yeast spores are in the air. And when we realize sin is all around us, you can remove all of the leavening from your home. And I've even had people say, no, I put in and trying to think what the machines are, that take all the air in the room because they said, I'm trying to get all the yeast spores out. Well, it's still there. You're not going to get all of the yeast spores out of the air. Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 1. Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 1. It says, you he made alive who were dead in your trespasses and in your sins. Now, none of us can say, well, I was never dead in trespasses. We were. If you are converted and if your baptism really did take, as Mr. Diaz was pointing out, you were dead in trespasses and in sins. And he says in verse 2, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the children of disobedience. among whom also we all conducted ourselves in the lust of the flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and we were by nature even children of wrath, just as others." He said, we're not going to get away from thinking we were never like them. We were never prone to sin or lusting or desiring the flesh and mind. This describes the sin that we're dead to. He said, you were dead to these things. The lust of the flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind. He said, this is what sin is. And that Satan is the prince of the power of the air, the one who inspires or causes individuals to sin. He says he's the prince of the power of the air, those things that are all around us. As we get rid of leaven, we have to think of the symbolisms about what it pictures. Cleaning out the mind of wrong thoughts and wrong desires. Not just cleaning out the house and going, okay, I've got all the leaven out, I've done my part. That's only the physical part, so you can, as you go along, focus on the spiritual, and for 7 days, focus on that spiritual. Some only do the physical. They say all you have to do is clean. It doesn't say you have to focus on sin for 7 days. That's depressing. No, you have to focus on not sinning, but you have to focus on doing what is right for 7 days. The spiritual. Understanding that the removal of that is to picture something spiritual, but also that there's more to it. Cleaning out the mind of jealousy and anger. Cleaning out the mind of fear and doubt. Cleaning out the mind of hypocrisy and deceit. These are leavens that we have to clean out. These are leavens we avoid during the days of unleavened bread. Hopefully we avoid them the rest of the year. But as we clean out leaven, these should be reminders. It should, number two, teach us to look for leaven or sin in the tiniest of places. When teaching our kids why we do leaven, you know, why do we have to put leaven out? Because we don't want to eat it. Because God says we're to do this as a reminder. A parent would say, well, you need to vacuum your closet and your dresser. At least this is what we did. And the kids would say, why do we have to vacuum the closet and dresser? We didn't eat there. And it's amazing how many times they found bread there, or part of a sandwich, or a piece of toast, something else. And again, when we examine ourselves, we don't want to just look at the broad areas and go, okay, where would I have eaten? Okay, those are the only rooms I'm going to clean. Because almost guaranteed, you'll find something somewhere. Now, the Jews said that even if a mouse ran across the room with a piece of crumb in its mouth, they would start over. Well, fortunately and hopefully we don't have mice. But if you had mice in a house, they could carry a piece of bread somewhere in the house and then later you find it. So we teach our kids we have to remove the leaven, not just in the areas that we think of, but we go through the house and remove wherever and clean, and we look at the detailed areas, the smaller areas. We don't just clean to the letter of the law. We clean in the spirit of the law as well. And again, you're going to be surprised at sometimes where you find leaven. A piece of toast can last a long time in the crack of a sofa. And sometimes you go, well, I removed the cushions last year and vacuumed for days in unleavened bread. There's nothing there. And I removed the cushions. And you push that cushion part down, and sometimes crumbs and everything else falls out of that little section. Or in the slot of a VCR. I know people don't use VCRs much anymore. But kids are very prone. Oh, the little door. And they've stuffed animals in there. Bread, toast, whatever it may be. We find things in odd areas. Entire goldfish crackers that could wiggle their way through the carpet, under the carpet, and there's holes inside the car that sometimes are like 6 inches deep and about an inch around. It's got a bolt at the bottom, and somehow that crackers get down inside those, and you pull the rug back and you go, how in the world did it make it under the carpet and all the way through? It's a goldfish, trained goldfish. You can roll the fridge out, and it's amazing. You think, well, you know, we don't eat at the fridge and there's not going to be anything there, but you roll the fridge out and under the dust bunny there's a little piece of bread or a piece of toast. Dust bunny's saving it for later. You don't expect dust bunnies either, but there's a lot of stuff that builds up under the washing machine, under the dryer, under the refrigerator, and you roll them out and you go, oh, I didn't realize how dirty or how messy it got, and I didn't realize food had gotten under there. That's what we learn. We learn, okay, there's areas of my life, in my life spiritually, are there areas that I go, no, I don't have to worry about that. That's not me. But if you started searching and digging deeper, you go, oh, I didn't expect to find anything there. And you know what? There's a problem in my life in areas that I didn't think of. 2 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 5. 2 Corinthians 13 and in verse 5. Examine yourselves as to whether you're in the faith. Test yourselves. Do you not know yourselves that Jesus Christ is in you, unless you're indeed disqualified? So it says examine yourselves. And that's just as we're told, before you take the Passover, you're to examine yourself. Examine yourselves whether you're of the faith. This word examine in the Strong's is a word pirazo, and it means to test, to scrutinize, to discipline, or to prove. Now, not prove like you're proving a dough, like in Great Britain, but to prove. And that word prove means to discern or to look deeper at something. So he says, when examine yourself, he doesn't say, do you remember anything off the cuff that you might have sinned? Nope. Okay, you're good. No, he says, dig deep, scrutinize, prove, or look deep into something. More detailed. Thayer's Bible Dictionary defines or says the meaning is to scrutinize, and it means to find out whether something is genuine or not. There's a lot of people, and most of us here have been in the church for decades, know of individuals that they did everything. They came to Sabbath services. They came to the holy days. We thought they were all dedicated and a part of things, and they were doing it just because. And it came to the point where they go, I just did it because the church told us to do it. That's not genuine. That's not sincere. So it says this word scrutinize, to examine yourselves, is to examine to see if you're genuine. As in testing metals to see if a metal is genuine. You know, somebody gives you gold and they say, here's a gold bar. It's 100% gold. You take it and have it refined and tested and scrutinized to see if it's genuine, and they come back and they go, it's 5% gold. And you go, oh, you know, this guy took me for this because I thought it was genuine. Genuine, according to Oxford Language Dictionary, means authentic. It's the real thing. So he says we are to scrutinize and examine ourselves if we're in the faith, because we need to know, is this the real thing? Do I completely understand that? And am I committed to it? Is it genuine? And is it authentic? And so we inspect ourselves to see if we're authentic. We inspect ourselves and we scrutinize and look deeply at ourselves to make sure that we are real. Not just going along with the flow of things and going along because we fit in, but because it's real. In Luke 12:1 it says, in the meantime, when the innumerable multitude of the people gathered together so that they trampled one another, it seems like that's becoming more and more of a thing today. You see events where people got scared or something happened, and to get out, they just trample over the top of one another. He began to say to his disciples, first of all, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Hypocrisy means false or having double standards. It's the opposite of genuine. Genuine is real. It is true. It is what we said, authentic. Hypocrisy is the opposite. Oxford Language Dictionary says the practice of claiming to have morals or standards or beliefs to which one's behavior does not conform. Oh, I believe what the church teaches. I understand, and this is what I'm committed to. And people that they work with go, they're in your church? They're some of the worst people we have at work. It's opposite. The word actually, it says, it's to which one's own behavior does not conform. It is a pretense. And the word pretense means a trick or a hoax. I belong to the church. I'm a part of the church. I'm fully committed to the church. When it's a show, it's hypocrisy. It's a trick or a hoax. Merriam-Webster defines it as a feigning to be what one is not, or to believe what one does not. It's amazing, and we have seen this over the years, so many people that said, oh, I believe what the church teaches. And then teachings were changed, and they believed what was taught. They believed it not because they had proved it or because they had looked at God's word and they said, no, I am not committed to this because I understand it. They just committed to believe, or to believe what one does not. Tithing principle. Years ago when they said, you don't have to tithe anymore, an individual who had been 30 or 40 years within the church said, I never believed in tithing anyway. And I think, how could you tithe and go along and do all of this for 3 decades and then go, I never believed it? Then why did you do it? That's hypocrisy. To believe what one does not. Behavior that contradicts what one claims to believe or to feel. And again, to claim to be a Christian, that's what taking God's name in vain. It's not just using the word God or using that in a wrong way. It's claiming, I am a Christian. I am of Jesus Christ. And not living that way of life. That is hypocrisy. So hypocrisy has to do with behaviors and actions in comparison to our thoughts. We're not genuine because it's only an outward show. It's not within the character of an individual. Trying to act like a Christian without being one. Trying to appear spiritual without having consistency. Claiming to be a disciple of Jesus Christ but not being genuine. So as we search, sincerely look for the leaven of hypocrisy. During the days of unleavened bread, during these particular days in looking for leaven, we look for things that we normally don't consider. Leaven in tiny or hidden places, or when we're looking for sin, tiny sins or hidden sins. Most people look at, okay, no, I'm not, I don't covet, I don't, you know, looking at the Ten Commandments. I don't do that. I haven't committed adultery. But we look at tiny sins or hidden sins and we go, you know what? This is the spark or the small amount of yeast that can start something that begins to grow later. So we look for things that sometimes we don't even know are there. If we knew we were there, they were there. It's like looking at the broad areas of the house. Okay, we're going to go everywhere we put food, and that would be the broad areas. But we look where we don't know, and sometimes we find things. Psalm 19 and verse 12. Psalm chapter 19 and in verse 12. Who can understand his errors? He said, if you think you can just look at yourself and say, oh, I know what's wrong with me. It's amazing when you ask somebody else who's willing to tell you and you go, oh, I didn't know that. Or I'm not like that. Who can understand his errors? David says, cleanse me from my secret faults. He said, there's things that I don't even know I'm doing wrong. Just as we see the example of him being revealed, what he had done. He's like, oh, take that man and do this. This should be the punishment. David, that's you. This is looking at ourselves and asking God to cleanse us from those secret faults, to point out those things that we need to overcome. Sometimes it's things we didn't even know were there. Adam Clark commentary says, and it's good to consider these particular things, cleanse me from my secret faults, from those things which I have committed and have forgotten. You know, when we sin, we're supposed to go to God, confess our sin, and repent and change. And God says he's faithful to forgive. But sometimes you may have committed sin and forgotten about it. Oh, I forgot. I started cussing on the freeway and shaking my fist at somebody, and I never went back and said I shouldn't have done that. Or from those things which I have not repented, from those things which I have committed in my heart but have not been brought to act in my life. Oh, yeah, there's things I thought about, but I never physically did them. If it was in your mind, you also have to repent of what you did in your mind. From those things which I have committed without knowing that they even were sins. Sins of ignorance from those which I have committed in private or for which I would blush or be confounded if they were to be made public. Paul talks about that. He says, those things which of now you are ashamed. You look back at your life and you go, I like the prior to conversion, or that's before I was converted. You look at your life and you go, I'm ashamed of what I did before I was converted. So it's saying you have to look for all of these different areas. And I like the way Adam Clark commentary talks about this particular phrase, cleanse me from my secret faults. It's all of those different areas. And we have to dig deep. And we have to search closely within the mind. How closely does God describe searching for sin or searching for things? Let's go to Amos chapter 9. Not typically a scripture we turn to before Days of Unleavened Bread. But Amos chapter 9 and verse 7. Amos chapter 9 and verse 7, talking about the destruction of Israel. He said, are you not like the people of Ethiopia to me, O children of Israel, says the Lord? Did I not bring up Israel from the land of Egypt? This has to do with these days. He said, do you not remember I brought you out of sin? But we know Israel has forgotten God. And the punishments that he warned would take place are coming. We read further in verse 8. It says, behold, the eyes of the Lord are on the sinful kingdom. God sees what's going on right now. I will destroy it from the face of the earth. Yet I will not utterly destroy the house of Jacob, says the Lord. For surely I will command, and I will sift the house of Israel among all nations, as grain is sifted in a sieve, and not the smallest grain shall fall to the ground. God says, when I'm doing something, I'm going to do it in detail, to the smallest amount. F.B. Meyer commentary states, the guilty will certainly be punished, and we know that individuals will not do things or live a way of life or have a character trait that is wrong, and that God will not recognize it. They will be punished. And if they enter into the sacred place of worship, even that will not be a shelter to them. Amos 9:1 talks about flight and concealment will be in vain. Let them climb high or burrow ever so deep. Let them scale the loftiest hills, dive into the deepest seas, or consequences of their sin will overtake them. How can sinners hope to escape from him whose chambers are built into the heavens and whose voice governs the tides? How great is the desolation of the past? Desolations of the past prove the exactness and severity of his judgments. That God says he will do what he says he's going to do. How remarkably Amos 9:9 has been fulfilled. Notwithstanding the scatterings, the Hebrew people have been preserved as a race. And God says, I will not destroy the house of Israel, or the house of Jacob, rather. And he promises that he will continue that line. So God is concerned with even the smallest amounts. Luke 15, verse 2 says, leaving the 99 and going after one. You say, well, is God so concerned about one? He's got 99. That's 99%. As a teen in high school, I thought, oh, if I got 90, I'm doing well. I'm in the top 10% of the class if I get 90. No, God says, 99 and one leaves, you go after the one. You bring it back, because God's concerned about detail. He's concerned about the one. And we have to look for sin in the smallest of places. Luke 19:7 says, he said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. Because you were faithful in very little, you have authority over 10 cities. We have to be faithful in little. That means, yes, we have to remove leaven. But we can't go, all I got to do is a physical. No, we also, as we remove leavening, we look at our lives and go, you know what? This is more important. I have to remove sin. I have to remove character traits. I have to remove flaws from my life. And so we can't swing to one end and go, all I'm going to do is remove the flaws. I'm not going to clean the house. Well, then you fail to do it physically. But you can't just clean physically and fail to do the spiritual, because you're still not keeping the Days of Unleavened Bread the way we're commanded to keep them. Number three, cleaning our physical homes from leaven puts us on the focus for cleaning our spiritual house. We think about why we're doing it, and it puts our minds on spiritual things. It should. There's an old saying, a cluttered home is a cluttered mind. Some of those shows you watch on TV, about hoarders, and they can barely walk through their house. There's nowhere to sit, nowhere to cook, nowhere to do anything because the house is just full of clutter. It says a cluttered home is a cluttered mind. We're talking about a physical home, and we're talking about the mind. Ridding our homes of leaven causes us to remove not only the leaven, but in the process, when we're removing, rolling out the fridge and cleaning out the dust bunnies and cleaning out food that might have gotten under there, we clean out the cupboards and remove any leaven. We're cleaning up the home. And it always feels so good after it's all done. You go, you know what? The house is nice and clean. And my office, I usually have camp things, feast things, local things all in my office. Got my office clean this week, and it's nice. Now, my desk is still, it's not cluttered. It's just I have things where they're supposed to be. All my post-its, my notes, my things I have to get to, they're in particular areas. But it's nice to have a clean office. And you go, okay, I feel like I'm in a better position because my physical house is clean. It's much better spiritually when you have that feeling going, you know what? I've seen things, I've repented of things, and I feel like I'm spiritually clean, especially after the Passover and we start into these days. We think about why we're doing it. It puts our minds on these spiritual things. My wife makes the comment quite often, I feel like I'm getting organized. And she says, I'm finally getting rid of all the old stuff. She says, I'm committed this year. We're getting rid of all the old stuff. And I don't know how many times we've done that, but every year you start finding more and more old stuff where you go, we haven't used this in 6 or 7 years. Oh, I know, but we need to keep that. And sometimes you start getting clutter and you go, you know what? We've got too much stuff. And again, we find more and more. Do we find more and more in our spiritual life as well? Do we look for things that, well, wait a minute, I haven't done this in my life. I haven't performed this. I haven't acted this way. And I should have been, or the opposite, going, you know, there's things I'm doing that I should have been removing and getting out of my life. Do we find more old things, or do we find that baggage that needs to be removed? Things that we're hanging on to in the mind. There, for years, when people came into the church, and we don't see that quite so often anymore, people would come into the church, as soon as I get baptized, I'm going to quit smoking. And then they get baptized and they're like, I'm still trying. I'm still smoking. Baggage that they're hanging on to in the mind. I don't want to give that up. We have to learn to give things up. We give up leavening for 7 days, but spiritually speaking, we give up a lot of things out of our mind and get rid of it permanently. When we put sin out of our lives and clean up our minds, we have to replace it with something. Let's go to Matthew chapter 12. Matthew 12 and verse 43. Matthew 12 and verse 43. This is talking about an unclean spirit. It says, when the unclean spirit has gone out of a man, he walks through the dry places seeking and finding and finds none. And when he says, I will return to the house from whence I came, and when he has come, he finds it empty, swept, and garnished. Evil spirit was removed from a man, and his mind is now cleansed. But when the spirit comes back, he says, I find a home empty, swept, and garnished. Then he goes and he takes with himself 7 other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter and dwell there, and the last state of the man is worse than the first. Even so it shall be also into this wicked generation. So he says, you can't just clean the house and think, okay, it's gone. You can't look at your life and go, here's a list of sins and things that I had a problem with. I removed them. Now I'm good. No, now you're empty. The past is gone. You have to start producing and doing things to replace it. I want to read, this is from Brainy quote. If you're looking for particular quotes on things, this is Brainy quote. If you leave the smallest corner of your head vacant for a moment, other people's opinions will rush in from all quarters. if you clear your mind and go, I don't want to have to think about anything, and then you're going to hear all kinds of opinions, and then guess what? It starts filling up in your mind. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. should be a memory scripture. But Philippians 4 and verse 8 tells us things that we need to be putting in. When we vacate the mind and we cleanse ourselves of sin and wrongdoing and wrong thoughts, here's what it tells us to replace it with. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, replacing it with truth. We know today we have to look for truth. It just can't, I watched the news, I know what's true. Or I saw it on Facebook. Well, good luck with that being true. We don't know what things are true unless we go to the truth. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, that word means honest, whatever things are honest, whatever things are just, that word means innocent or holy, whatever things are pure, that's clean and modest, whatever things are lovely, not just, that's lovely, acceptable or pleasing, whatever things are of good report, meaning it's reputable, it has a good report to it. If there's any virtue, if there be anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. He said, put these in your mind. So he's telling us what we should be filling our minds with. He says, don't just clean your mind. Don't just clean the house and go, leaven's all gone. I've done my part for Days of Unleavened Bread. No, that's so it puts you in the mind frame of putting leaven out. Now focus on putting unleavened in. Number four, de-leavening puts us in the right mind for the year ahead. This is a time to go through a process of renewal, not just at the Passover, but with the Days of Unleavened Bread as well. How many of you remember the movie Cool Hand Luke? There's a few. Cool Hand Luke is an old movie. This guy is put in prison working on the chain gang. And the guard looks at him, looks at Luke, and he says, "You got your mind right, boy? You got your mind right?" And I think of that when I think of getting your mind right or putting your mind right. Think of Cool Hand Luke. But God wants us to have a right mind. And he says, before we go through this process, and as we put leaven out of our lives physically, and you start getting into the frame of mind of going, okay, I'm supposed to be looking for spiritual leaven. It gets us in the right frame of mind for the next year. Once we de-leaven our homes, and we keep the night to be much observed, we're to stay de-leavened for the next 7 days. And the whole process is not just remove it and stay de-leavened. Don't have leaven. We have to build a habit of now developing something, putting something in. Exodus 13:7 says, "Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days. No leavened bread shall be seen among you." That's why we clean our vehicles too, going, I can't have a loaf of bread. I can't carry boxes of pizza dough in the car. "Nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters." So I said, don't let it be seen among you or seen hanging your leavening over the fence, nor shall it be in your quarters. Once we keep the Passover and the night to be much observed, we're cleansed of sin. That spiritual leaven has been removed. And that's a good feeling. And now he said he wants us to be in the attitude of watching out for and eliminating sin, to stay de-leavened, staying spiritually de-leavened. Years ago, and I've shared this story before, so if you've heard it, you're going to hear it again. I worked at a TV station, and I sold TV advertising for almost 5 years. And at this TV station, it had horrible coffee. I love coffee, but every morning I go in there, and it's almost like that dark, thick tar pouring into your cup. It wasn't very good coffee. But sometimes it was the only thing they had, and they had powdered creamer, which personally I don't care for powdered creamer, so I would drink it really black, really black. But I went in, and they had bad coffee and a box of Krispy Kreme donuts. I'm not a big donut fan, but I was like, I'm not a breakfast eater either. So I was like, 10 o'clock in the morning, get my nasty coffee, that donut would go really well. So I reached over and I grabbed one of those donuts and I took a big bite of it and I spun around. Nobody was in the break room. I spun around, I started to walk out of the break room, and they had one of those big 55-gallon trash cans. And as I started to walk out, I'm like, It's the days of unleavened bread. I spit it out, spit it in the trash. And I almost got nauseated, almost got sick to my stomach, thinking, I just put that leavening in my mouth, totally out of the blue, didn't catch it, didn't see it. But God wants us to have that attitude towards sin, that when we see sin in our lives, we go, it makes us nauseated, it makes us sick to think, how could I let that in? How could I let that little bit of sin into my life when I'm focused so hard on removing it? When I'm focused on so hard on doing what is right? This holy day season of unleavened bread gets us in the mindset for the next year. It's a new beginning. We remove sin. We're forgiven of sins. And we should be asking God to remove even the secret sins or secret faults. But it's a new beginning. We go, okay, what am I going to put in this year? What am I going to focus on developing so that some of those things just don't come back and fill the void? Colossians chapter 3. And verse 8. Colossians 3 and verse 8. He says, but now you also put off these. It's almost like put out the leavening. Put out anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. Don't lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old man with his deeds. If you have truly gone through the conversion process, you have put off the old man. But that doesn't mean the old man's not going to pop back up. You have put off the old man with his deeds. And you have put on a new man. Not just that you removed something. You didn't just remove leavening from your houses for the days of unleavened bread. Hopefully you've removed leavening and at the same time going, I'm removing anything that resembles that spiritually as sin. Put on a new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him who created him. So he says, put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge. You start digging. You start realizing I have to replace it with something, and I want to replace it with what is good, as Philippians told us. We are quickly approaching the Passover. It's less than 2 weeks away. We need to use that time as we de-leaven our homes to de-leaven the mind as well. To focus on the mind and get a right mind for the year ahead. It's a physical lesson with a spiritual intent. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, 7. As we wrap things up, 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 7. And I told you we would get to it in the sermon. It's at the very end. Therefore, purge out the old leaven. That doesn't mean, okay, well, I just bought this. It's new leaven. No, you purge out any leaven. You purge out spiritually your old man that you may be a new lump. So he doesn't just say purge out physical leaven. He said that you may be a new lump since you truly are unleavened. That is the whole premise of God saying, I want you to remember me taking Israel out of sin, and I've taken you away from sin. You've put sin out of your life. You put leaven out of your life because now you're unleavened. But he says, you're not empty. He says, you're unleavened. You're pure. You're genuine. For indeed, Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us. These days are symbolic for you and I becoming unleavened. Not just for cleaning a house, not just for going through a routine of eating flat crackers and getting bread out of the house. It is a symbol of you and I becoming unleavened. The practice of being genuine, true, and authentic. Verse 8, it says, therefore, let us keep the feast. Not with the old leaven. He's saying, and here he's not talking about, oh, you found some more after you started. Not with the old leaven, not with the old way of life, not with the old way of thinking, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but you keep it with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth.